Welcome to another episode of the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Oh, yes, indeed, with a seamless counter four, so I don't need to edit it later. Ladies and gentlemen, min, we're recording live on LinkedIn as an extra bell and whistle today, but I'm delighted to welcome to Stories of Distinction and Genius the wonderfully enigmatic Ian Thackra, who is the co-founder of Editions London and other stuff, which we will discuss shortly too. And yes, we're going to be doing a founder or brand strand story and episode where we're going to work out who, the what, the where, the how, the and why do you do what you do. So Ian Thackra, I'll explain a bit more about how we met recently, but welcome. How's morale and what's your story of the day, please?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me, Chris. Story of the day is actually, I think it's one of the best bits about working for yourself. So my daughter has qualified for a national cross-country championship, which found out 2 days ago. It's happening this afternoon. So straight after this, I am jumping in the car to go and get her, to take her over to Temple Newsham, which is near us, and they're going to spend the afternoon running. But the story is, like, under normal circumstances, in a normal job or in my previous job, I would have had to miss that. So the story of today is kind of, I suppose, one of freedom and being able to just, you know, I'm in charge, I'm in control, cancel everything, make my children a priority. And yeah, work finishes at 11:30 today. So good.
Flexibility and freedom. That is the awesome thing about being a creative. Now, you are a creative mentor to creative entrepreneurs. I've loved your copy, by the way, and really enjoyed researching you. You're a writer, speaker. You say you're a creative generalist and a creative specialist, which I really enjoy. So it's about knowing everything and nothing, but then applying both skills to bring others to the fore.
Yeah, I like the phrase jack of all trades, master of some.
Yes, is me that... too. Saw that on there too. Also, I love the fact that a couple of days ago you posted, I don't particularly appreciate being recorded, so I'm making every effort to get myself recorded. Feel the pain and do it anyway, which is a good ploy in life in any case. So congratulations. Also, you're taking an extra plunge in that we're doing this as a LinkedIn Live as well. So I congratulate you.
Yeah, the added pressure of the red button in the top corner that has the word live written in it is it's definitely present right now. So,
and whenever our presence is required, you know, in all of our creative endeavours, you know, every day our presence is required, as indeed you're required in the car straight after this to take your daughter to the cross-country event. And congratulations to her, by the way.
Thanks.
And is she a sort of stealth athlete or is she one of the quickest?
She is ludicrously determined and incredibly stubborn. I have no idea where this character trait comes from.
Yes, awkward.
But yeah, when she gets it, when she gets her mind and her head set on something, she just, yeah, she can almost kill herself in the process of achieving it. So yeah, I think she's, I don't know, I won't say she's a natural athlete, but her just strength of will sees her through something like a cross-country race. She just doesn't back down, which is incredible to watch.
And I love the obvious life skill metaphor in that. And I think we both share an adage in common that we both enjoy, which is there's no shortcut to success. Tomorrow we go again, which I suspect we both got from David Hyatt. You might have known it before that. But we met at an event that David Hyatt from the Do Lectures was running in London about a month ago. And then we've made this very quick connection into curating you through this journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you don't mind, I'll ask you a deliberately clunky question, which we all get, just to get us going. If someone doesn't have a frame of reference in meeting you and finding you interesting, as I did myself, you know, when people are more clumsy, they go, oh, hello, what do you do? What is your favourite way of answering or avoiding that question, Ian?
I quite like the avoiding that question. I understand that the answer, it's complicated, is not a very fulfilling answer. So the simple answer is I run a couple of companies. Those companies specifically help other people run their companies, and mostly it's creative professionals. So it's people who have got really, really good at something, to the point at which they have this thought in their mind where they go, oh, I could probably do this myself. I could probably start a business doing this. Mm-hmm. And so they take that creative skill into the real world, and then they realize that they don't necessarily have the business acumen to, you know, deliver on that creative work. And so I help them with that business side, so they can keep focused on the creative side, so they can actually make a decent living doing the work that they love. So they don't have to, I mean, this is the darker answer, is they don't have to go back and get a real job. Cause that is the fear for most of the people that I work with, is that one day they're going to have to, you know, call it a day and go back to the 9-to-5 agency work. So yeah, I think that's a good way of describing what I do. I help other people build their own businesses.
And that is a great answer. Unpacking the it's complicated. Can I just congratulate you on the congruence that then unpacked from that center point? Yeah. So talking about unpacking from the center point, as I just did, see what I'm doing here. It's my absolute pleasure to curate you through the particular journey of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. There's going to be a clearing, a tree, a really lovely, juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There'll be some Shakespeare, a couple of random squirrels, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's all to play for. And there'll be a bit of Shakespeare in there, which I think I just mentioned as well. So let's get you on the open road. Remembering this is a founder story, and there will be a deliberate invitation to go as deep as you like into your own URLs when we finish speaking towards the end. But I know that obviously your company is, just say the name of your company, just so we can position that for us.
So, well, I'm running three at the moment, although one is a secret, so I can't tell anybody about that one.
Okay.
But it does kind of exist. The other one is Editions London, so editions.london, which is a publishing company. It's the best way to describe it. And then I run 3.175, which is a coaching company. So three things in the fire at the moment.
Lovely. And I was intrigued by the 3.175. Just rather comically, I've got a bell in case we go down any rabbit holes, which is cashier number 4, please. But we'll go, in your case, cashier number 3.175, please. So let's get you on the open road. So Ian Thacker, creative specialist, where is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
I'm a cyclist. And I'm one of those middle-aged men in Lycra. Like we're mammals, we are called. We like to get on very expensive items with very tight-fitting clothing and head out into the roads. But no, it's cycling for me. It's such a powerful, I don't know, experience. It's difficult to describe. There's something about the turning of the pedals. There's something about the being on your own out in the world. It's quite kind of metronomic, the way you kind of, you know, you just tap those pedals round and round for an hour, for a couple of hours, and I find about 20 minutes into that my brain switches just from, you know, the everyday kind of noise into a different gear. And there's a bit of science behind it if you want to get super geeky about it, and like alpha waves, theta waves, beta waves, and it suddenly just switches. But once you change your brain into that second gear, like your creativity lights up, the noise disappears. And I usually find that, I mean, I ride almost every day. I tend to ride around about lunchtime. So I'll do a morning's worth of work, ride at lunch, and then do an afternoon's worth of work. And I tend to find that I end the morning with a problem, go for a ride, and then in the afternoon I have a solution. because the ride has given me that space, that process to get out and.
I love that, by the way. That's so relatable. One of my favorite own personal mantras is my bike is my freedom. In fact, I'm constantly posting about my bike being in the background, actually. That is so relatable. And indeed, preparing for you, I've done the alpha, beta, alpha, beta, alpha, beta. I've gone for a squeak round Bristol Docks in order to get ready for today. That is so relatable. So where would you like to be on your bike? Or are you just happy to be out and about wherever?
So I'm quite happy to be out and about wherever. I mean, I live in one of the hilliest parts of the UK. So riding around here is hard. Like it's just tough riding. So you can't, there are no easy rides. There's nothing gentle, but also quite like to race my bike rather than ride the bike. And so I'm usually head down full speed. So as long as I'm somewhere where I can ride hard, then I'm happy. It's the easy rides that I find frustrating. They're just the 2 hour, the gentle, but it's not for me. It is, flat out from the moment I leave to the moment I get back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
So astride the steed of Ian Thacker is where your clearing is. And what beastie are we riding today, please? So you can pick a, what's your bike?
Several. So I have two, but I ride a Cervelo S5, which is considered to be the, I can get super geeky on this as well, it's considered to be the fastest road bike in production right now. And I own it because it means I have no excuses. Because I used to ride, a pretty basic, pretty cheap bike, and I got beaten by loads of people on expensive bikes. And I always had that feeling that, if I had an expensive bike, then I might win. Now, the reason why I keep losing is just down to the person on the bike and not down to the bike itself. I can't use that as an excuse anymore. So that's my weapon of choice.
That wasn't too super geeky. I didn't have to go, that was a rabbit hole. That was great. So if I may, rather comically, I'm going to arrive with a tree now in your clearing. So I've got to sort of catch up with you on your bike. I'm going to shake your tree. And because of my acting background, this is a bit Waiting for Godot-esque and existential. I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out now. And this is where you've been kind enough to prepare your answers to the construct 54321, where you've had 5 minutes, Ian Thacker, to have thought about four things that have shaped you. Three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's a bit, squirrels, what never fails to grab your attention. And then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. So now we're in the canopy of the tree. Interpret that as you'd like.
Thank you. Yes, I had a difficulty coming up with these stories. So I've settled on something that I'm not overly comfortable sharing yet, because it's quite a significant story in my life. But I grew up on a farm. So I think your Yorkshire countryside, rolling hills. We got snowed in 1 year for 3 weeks. had to hike to the local shop for supplies. We were the only farm in the area that had solid fuel energy production. So we had a solid fuel fire, we had a solid fuel cooker. So all the people who had electricity only houses basically came around and ate at ours for 3 weeks, and they brought everything out of their freezers. So we're talking like quite a like a rural area. I had a pet pig. It was just, I think, equally terrifying and fascinating to a kind of a 5-6 year old child. But it was incredibly smart. It learned to open doors, and we lived in the middle of nowhere, so we never locked any doors. And every now and then you just come down in the morning, there'd just be a pig sat in the house, just, you know, just let itself in.
Morning, Porky. What's for breakfast? I'm kidding.
We did eat it in the end. That was an interesting day. And like, there's just a huge amount of freedom with that farm life, countryside life. I remember one day, just I was talking to someone about this morning, actually. I rode to the local town to buy McDonald's, because that was what you didn't get living on a farm, was fast food and that kind of stuff, and rode home, and my parents never even asked where I was all day. The local town was 13 miles away, and I was probably about 9 at the time, and it's just that freedom. It never crossed my mind that, like, you know, all those constraints has existed. You were just free to go where you want and do what you want. And it was fantastic.
And that links to your bike being your freedom at the age of 9 right there.
Yeah. So that was where it all started. But then the 90s happened, and we lost most of our livestock due to illness. So we lost all our cows, all our sheep, in pretty much one go.
Is that the foot and mouth outbreak that happened late 90s?
I don't believe it was foot and mouth. I think it was something else. I did actually Google that last night to just check if it was foot and mouth, but I don't think it was foot and mouth. But the illness took the whole flock of sheep and the whole herd of cows. And then the recession was starting to kick in from like the early 90s. My dad ran a business and that went bankrupt. Okay. And his business folded, and within about a year we lost the farm. And I think that kind of that moment where, you know, the removal trucks turn up and you start, you know, leaving that dream life behind, as a 12-year-old, 11-year-old, like, you're not quite old enough to process it, you're not told everything, you're not given enough, you're not given all the information. You're just kind of, you know, this is what's happening and here we go. And I think that gave me kind of quite a healthy fear of entrepreneurship and the risks involved when, like, starting a business on your own, running a business for yourself results in you losing your house. You kind of like get a fear of it. And it gave me quite a fear of, like, I think work in general. I just didn't want to get a job. So the next part of the story is I was a student until I was 27. I've got
just a hedge of bets. I love that.
I've got a couple of degrees and a master's degree and a postgraduate teaching certificate, and like anything I could get my hands on that would keep me out of the working world, I did.
And it includes philosophy, reading philosophy in Cardiff, I researched.
Yeah, continental and analytic philosophy, and the distinction between the two, and obviously one's realism and one's anti-realism, and yeah, and it makes you completely unemployable. But it was fascinating for a while. And
and did we finish the pig story, by the way, just to make sure, because there wasn't anything else to say about the pig that I interrupted.
No, the pig's gone.
Sorry.
That's
me going down a pig rabbit hole. Sorry about that.
I mean, the pig was delicious. Anyway, moving on. And so at the age of 27, I finally had to get a real job. So I got a real job in teaching, which some people would say is not a real job because of the holidays that come with it. And I did that for 10 years. And I think 10 years in, having had that kind of fear of entrepreneurship, everyone had always encouraged me to, you know, get a job, get a career, get something stable, you know, walk the path that other people walk, that reliable paycheck month to month. Now, teaching really is a job for life. Like, it's very difficult to get fired as a teacher. It's very difficult to stop teaching because it's just your contract just renews and renews. They can't get rid of you unless you move to another school or you retire. And I was sat there kind of like, having got everything that everybody had ever told me that I should want and I should have and I should crave. And I was kind of left with that. Is this it? Like, and I was looking at it and I've got another 30 years of this. Like, is this what I'm supposed to do? Like, clock in and clock out? Like, 8:45 every morning, 3:45. I mean, it's a short day. I mean, that's good. It's long holidays, you know, good pension. But like, really? And I felt a bit kind of, I don't know, cheated by it all, that I'd followed the advice. I'd followed what people had told me to do. And even when I was thinking, I then decided, like, so I've got to get out of this. Like, I've got to get out of this before it kills me, because it was getting...
And by the way, I'm sure your philosophy degree helped with that, because that's the existential angst of, is this it? And why is it? And all that stuff.
Yeah, very relatable. It was just a bizarre feeling. And it just hit me one day. I was just sat in the staff room and I was just looking around the room and I was like, that's me in 4 years. That's me in 5 years. That's me in 10 years. That's me in 30 years. And it's the same chairs and the same room and the same place.
And what subject were you teaching that you were in the vortex with?
I was teaching philosophy and psychology. So the teaching side of it was great. Like, I really enjoyed teaching, and that's kind of flowed into my coaching work now, that whole kind of, you know, helping people grow, helping people through their troubles, their challenges and all that kind of stuff. The teaching side of it was great. It was more just like the, I don't know, the institution of it all, the way it worked, it's presenteeism. The idea that you can only be working hard if you're in the room.
Yes.
And if you're out of the room, then you must be being lazy. And it's like, the longer you spent at school, the more likely you were to be promoted. And I was like, well, that doesn't work. Like, these people, they spend hours at school because they're not very good at their jobs. Like, if you're more efficient and more effective, you could go home on time. And it very turned into quite a toxic thing in my life in about 6 months, because I realized I was becoming less and less likable to be around.
And this would have been about 37 now in your timeline, because you were stuck in it for 10 years, you were saying.
Yeah, I'm about 30. So yeah, thanks for keeping count. This is now 37. And so I completely checked out. Like, I started leaving as early as I could. I was riding my bike more, which was great. So I would ride it to school, ride it home from school. But basically, I was sat there waiting until I could get back on my bike. And I was like, this is not how you should be living your life. You shouldn't be counting down the minutes until you get to leave work. And then I was giving loads of advice to kids about how they should follow their dreams and they should do what they love and not do what people tell them.
And by the way, what I so enjoy is the word should. And then now you're telling yourself shouldn't. That's so powerful.
So I quit. One day I was just like, that's enough. I quit. And I was very fortunate in that I landed a job at a startup doing product development, just completely like out of nowhere. Got myself a nice six-figure salary. And so I was like, right, I'm out of here. This is fantastic. And then 2 years later, that company folded. Startups don't survive. And so that didn't make it. So I'm now 39. And I have literally nothing, like absolutely nothing. I mean, I still have my house. I still have my family. I still have my health. I'm in a very privileged position. But as far as kind of career and life go, like I was back at square zero. And I wasn't worried, because I now knew from those experiences, like, everything that I didn't want to do. So I knew what to run away from, but I also now knew what I wanted to run towards. And so
by the way, what's lovely, the interpretation there is, you're not at square zero at all. You're very, very advanced in your own development and self-awareness. And it's a bit like, what three words, that at, map, you know, your, the three words to plot your coordinates would be very profoundly positioning you for what you're about to tell us comes next.
So, and I think that was that realization that, like, okay, I didn't have anything going on, but I knew what I was going to make. I knew where I was going to go next. I'm a massive fan of bootstrapping, building something from literally nothing. I love the creativity that not having a budget brings. I think if you can throw money at a problem, you don't have a problem. You just haven't spent your money yet. You have a budgeting issue or a priority issue, but if you have no budget, problems need to be, you know, solved in different ways. And I absolutely love that. And that leads me to love small businesses, because small businesses don't have the same budget. Solopreneurs, freelancers can't just pay for a marketing executive, a sales executive to come in and work on a base salary and commission. They have to find other ways of doing things.
Again, that's so relatable. Welcome to my world.
And that's the thing as well. And that's what I'm doing as well. So, like, as you see the background around you, this is my entire business. I'm in my spare room right now, which is a converted office. And I run my business from, I think it's about 3 meters wide by about 3 meters wide. So 9 meter square box is what run out of it, and the budget for everything is only what comes in. So I can only spend what, there's no debt, there's no loans, there's no funding behind me. It is literally just I make money, and it's money I either pay myself or I spend growing my company.
So you are afloat.
Yes.
And by the way, you must mention, you've got the most beautiful document on your LinkedIn profile, which is your 100 lessons document, you know, what you've learnt retrospectively, 100 lessons. Anyone watching, I would just encourage you to connect with Ian Thacker and have a look at that document. It's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. We're in the process of turning that into a book. Well, book, and I'm going to use my inverted commas, because one of the other things, I don't know if that works on a podcast, inverted commas.
It did for me. I'm there.
Because one of the other things, I love that counterintuitive approach, like don't be most people, don't do what everyone else is doing. And this comes to the 3.175 idea. Stand out an eighth of an inch, do something a little bit different. So I use the word book because it's the easiest way to explain it, and it will look and it will serve the same purpose. Sorry, it will serve the same purpose as a book. It won't quite look like a book. I'm using the word book loosely there. So
it ends up looking like a pig. That'll be everything going full circle, but I'm sure it will.
So that's where I am. And I've been doing this for 3 years now. I just literally started, and I found the first person to coach. And then I found the next person, and then I found the next person, and we've just been going from there. I now coach a group of people all across the world. I mean, the pandemic has had its downsides in that I no longer get to travel to see my clients, but it's had its upsides. And I now have clients in Australia. I have one in Maui. So it kind of goes the full width of the globe. And just, it's just been a great 3 years. And then last month started the second company. And then hopefully by the end of this year, we'll start the third company. So that's those are my four stories. Kind of, I think there's four somewhere.
I see what you did there. That was a really beautiful interpretation of that construct, actually. Thank you. Now then, three things that inspire you. You're being inspirational anyway, but just how did you interpret that question?
Yeah, so the inspiration. So I'm incredibly internally focused. I used to be quite externally focused, and so I had a very unhealthy competitive nature because it was all about me against the world. And then I suppose 5 years ago, as that shift changed, it became me against me. So it's that drive. My inspiration comes from my own personal drive in terms of I want to be better. That's the thing that inspires me and motivates me and gets me to sit down every morning and I do that 1% better mentality, try and get one thing improved every day. And that's my kind of internal drive. And if I just keep ticking off that 1% better, then that will compound over time. into something hopefully quite remarkable.
And the three, I love that, just to put the cherry on the cake of the stick out by an eighth of an inch. That's what the 3.175 pertains to, just to make sure that's planted there.
Yeah, 3.175 millimeters is 1/8 of an inch. And the 1/8 of an inch story comes from a guy I work with over in the US. He's an art center professor, teacher, and entrepreneur himself. He's been doing it for, he's 78 now. He's still going. He's an incredible guy. And he was the subject of our first book for Editions London 50. It's a celebration of his 50 years of teaching. But yeah, that comes from his 1/8 of an inch story, which I won't tell you because maybe you'll get to ask him yourself one day. So yeah. And then, so back on track, I think externally, so the things outside of me, so mainly internally focused, but the things outside of me, I have to say this, she's out of earshot at the moment, she's working downstairs. My wife is just an incredible, just absolutely incredible woman. She's a palliative care doctor, so an end-of-life care doctor, which is an incredibly difficult field to, I suppose, to work in. And she's just awesome. And so she's incredibly inspiring. And then my two girls, I've got one who's 8 and one who's 5. And I've told you, the 8-year-old is just ludicrously determined. And the 5-year-old has just got a massive, massive heart. Like, I've never seen someone so genuinely excited for someone else's success.
Oh, wow.
So it's so sweet. It's like, it's heart meltingly sweet. She's got those big eyes. Like, it's just got me wrapped around her finger. But like, when she found out that her eldest, like my eldest, had got selected for this, she was over the moon. Like, she wasn't like, oh, I missed out. It wasn't like, oh, I didn't make it or anything like that. She was just genuinely excited for someone else. I just think that's incredible. So that family unit of mine is very inspirational. And then I suppose if I look beyond that, it's like people who make stuff. I just find anyone who can actually get something finished, produced, and put out into the world, I just find that inspiring, because it's like, finishing is really hard. Shipping is really hard. Putting yourself and your work out there is really hard. So anybody who's got through all of that and gone, here, I made this, like, look at it. It's here for you to see. I find that incredible. So anyone who's making stuff for themselves, I think is amazing.
And now we're on to the two squirrels, you know, borrow from the film up. What are the random squirrels that never fail to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you?
Yes, I think remarkable things. So using the Seth Godin definition, I mean, Seth Godin's a huge influence on me. I'm going to use one of his quotes in a minute. And he uses the word remarkable as in something that you would make a remark about. So you would actually go, hey, like, look at this. Look at what I just found. And it's things that are better than they need to be or different than they should have been. So I don't know if you can see in the background, and again, this might not work on the podcast, but in the background, I've got a book on the shelf. That is a cookbook, and it is massive. It's like an A3 size cookbook by a guy called Michael O'Hare, who runs The Man Behind the Curtain in Leeds, which is a Michelin star restaurant. He's a fantastic character. And every chef needs a cookbook, because you've got to have a cookbook. So every chef makes the cookbook, and it's like, oh, here are some recipes, and here's an introduction, and here's a picture of some ingredients, and here's the finished dish. And then we do it again until we've got enough. Like, this is nothing like that. It's full of poetry and philosophy on taste and eating. And it's so big that you wouldn't actually, like, you can't put it on a worktop and even use it. I mean, it has got some recipes in it, but you couldn't leave it out while you were cooking. And it also costs 10 times more than any cookbook does. And there's no reason why, if you have to do something, you then have to do it the same kind of way.
Yes.
And there's a, I mean, I've got tons of examples on this. So there's a company called Little Mismatched. I don't know if they exist in the same way anymore because I haven't looked them up for a while, but they're a sock company. And they do what every sock company does. They make a set of socks. They try to get it into Walmart or they try to get it into Target and they sell, and it's a volume thing and it's about distributors, all that kind of stuff. So they released a pair of socks that contains three socks, all of which are different. So you buy a pair of socks. So they are unmatched socks, but each set of unmatched socks isn't necessarily the same as the next set of unmatched socks.
Oh, they randomize. I love that. Yes.
They completely randomize them. And so people, they got them, and it's all about little girls who are in, like in school, and they don't necessarily have the confidence to go up and start conversations with people. They now have a reason to connect with people in the room, because if they see someone else with these unmatched socks, they can go over, ask her, which ones did you get? Like, look at my socks. And they can swap socks and they can try and match them into pairs of socks and all this kind of stuff. And it totally breaks the traditional, you know, clothing manufacturer company mentality. And they became a huge, huge success kind of late 2000, I think it's like 2008, 2009, they became a thing.
What a genius again, story.
Like,
yeah.
Like, it's just brilliant. And I just think this is just incredible, because you could have done the obvious thing and tried to get into mass production of socks, outsourced it to China and bulk ordered it and they just were like, no, we're not doing that. We're doing something totally different. And because of that, a really small group of people absolutely loved it. And that was their success.
A sort of maverick genius and the courage to be an outlier as well. Do something different.
Yeah. And I love those stories.
And I love the idea that the cookbook is so big, it's almost its own trestle table.
So I've got two more behind me. These are by Seth Godin. These are limited run books. One's called The Behemoth, which is What Does It Sound Like When You Change Your Mind? It cost more to post than it did to make. It's so heavy. I'm not going to go back and pick it up because it's like, it's actually quite a work. It weighs about 20 kilos. And he released 500 of those. And again, I think this kind of comes into my second thing, limited edition items that are genuinely limited and like genuinely unique. So you get a lot of like, you know, fear of missing out stuff where they say, oh, this will run out in 2 days. And then you get an email 5 days later saying, oh, it hasn't really run out, but it's going to run out in 2 days. And then 3 months later, they're still emailing you saying this thing is almost, it's like the closing down sales that the shop never closes down. Limited run items like that. I bought a jumper from Always Wear Red. I'm doing a lot of product placement today. And they made 50 hand knit items. That is the entire lifespan of the company. It's just 50 items.
Wow. That's the end of the company.
Yeah.
Drop the mic. We're done at 50.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. We've launched. We've made 50. When those 50 are gone, we're done. And I just think that's just genius, absolute genius. And those are genuinely limited runs. I've forked out, I would say, a small fortune for one. But I definitely...
You've got one of the 50. And I love that.
One of the 50.
We're done. Yeah. We're done. My daughter says, we're done.
it's quite cool, though, because some people message me and they introduce me, but all the jumpers are numbered. And they introduce me by their jumper number. And
what jumper number do you have?
I'm J21.
Jumper 21, please.
Yeah. And so it's, and they're all unique. They've all got slightly different patterns on them. So no jumper is the same. So they're one of a kind of a set of 50. I mean, some of them are scarves rather than jumpers, but there's a set of jumpers anyway. But those limited run things are just...
And presumably it's too late. They have gone. There are no more jumpers. You will never get...
No, they are still available. Always Wear Red. It's run by a guy called Michael Owen. He's based up in Northumberland. And it's just an incredible story. And
I wondered where he got to. He used to be an awesome footballer, but
a different Michael Owen.
Obs.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And now, if I may, a quirky or unusual fact to finish the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. A quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you, Ian, until you tell us.
I really struggled with this one. I don't know. I'm slightly embarrassed about it now. I mean, I spent 14 years doing it. So I'm a European and national ultimate Frisbee champion.
Oh! Round of applause from all of LinkedIn there. That's awesome.
Thank you. That's it's something that not many people know about because I just kind of don't talk about it anymore. It's a period of my life that happened. I spent quite a long time traveling the world, seeing the world one Frisbee tournament at a time. And picked up a...
You have not had a wasted youth. And also there's a big metaphor in just the Frisbee chucking of small business help that you give by being a creative mentor.
Yeah, I'd like to say wasted youth, but I was well into my 30s when I stopped playing.
Well, you were being an unhappy teacher until you're 37. You had time on your hands to chuck Frisbees. I love that. Yeah. We've shaken your tree. Hurrah. Now we stay in the clearing, move away from the tree. And now we talk about alchemy and gold. When you're at purpose and in flow, what are you absolutely happiest doing, Ian?
It's got to be writing, and specifically writing with a pencil, like writing pencil to paper. I find it has the same feeling as riding a bike. But specifically, I think writing is the best way to grow a business. I think it's the biggest, strongest, most powerful thing that you can do for your business is to get good at writing and to publish and ship and showcase your thought through writing. That's me. I would happily become a full-time writer if I could find a way to earn enough money doing it.
And are you clasping the very pencil of choice of the moment now? Is that a pencil?
Yeah. Actually cheating. This is a digital pencil, but the pencil of choice, I've got thousands of these. These are Blackwing 602s.
I love that. We're going all geeky. Blackwing 602, please.
Blackwing 602. They, again, are a fascinating company. There was a famous writer who said that he wanted to be buried with his. The company had closed down. And so all of a sudden, these started going for like $60, $80 on eBay for a single pencil. And someone spotted the opportunity, bought the company and relaunched it. And they now run like limited runs. Every 3 months, they release a new pencil. You can buy it basically until stock runs out. And then 3 months later, they release another one.
They had you at limited edition, didn't they, Ian?
Japanese graphite and,
just say the name of the pencil again. I love the, I mean this as a compliment, I love the geekery of the pencil. So rather than like it's an HB or 2B or not 2B, that is the question. What is it?
It's a Blackwing 602.
Anyone else driving a Blackwing 602, get in touch with Ian and you can swap.
Yeah.
Hurrah. Yeah. Okay, now I'm going to award you with a cake. Huzzah.
Thank you.
And so now you get to put a cherry on the cake. And this is stuff like a favorite inspirational quote. Enter Seth Godin, maybe, as you teased us a bit earlier on. Mm-hmm. This is what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself? And we're ramping up to a bit of Shakespeare, but the golden baton bit will come just before that. Easy, mind your bell. So a favorite inspirational quote, Ian.
I've got it here. It's on the inside of this Seth Godin book, just so I get it right. It's called What You're Going to Do With That Duck. It says, we're surrounded by people who are busy getting their ducks in a row, waiting for just the right moment. Getting your ducks in a row is a fine thing to do, but deciding what you're going to do with that duck is far more important. And that's one of his posts from, I don't know, 2000 and something. And I just find it, I'm really good at overthinking things. My weakness lies in actually getting those things done. And it reminds me that if it's not done, it doesn't count. Like if it's not made, anything incomplete, anything unfinished gets you a score of zero. Anything that's finished gets you a score of one. So you have to ship something. You have to make something in order for it to count. And that's, yeah, that's every day that quote. And
by the way, I noticed on LinkedIn through David Hyatt that one of David Hyatt's contact has got Seth Godin coming into his podcast soon. How exciting must that be? Wow.
Yeah. I got Thank 5 minutes that. With him once and it was just the best 5 minutes ever. Great. Yeah. Lovely human being. Great guy. And like just a genius, absolute genius.
The go-to marketing guru for so many, I know. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, Ian?
I think it's don't be most people. And I've had it in several forms from several places. You just mentioned David Hyatt. He's mentioned it to me before. Seth Godin, I've learned that from him as well. And Errol Gerson, who I work with, he's got a similar kind of mentality. But yeah, don't be most people. Don't do what most people are going to do. Like most people won't be patient. Most people won't be consistent. Most people will be obvious. And so if you want to go into that, it's a really competitive place to be because you're competing with most people. The thing that is going to set you out is to do what other people won't. And they won't stay, they won't ship, they won't finish, they won't be creative, they won't challenge the status quo.
By the way,
that's
exactly
what you should do.
I love your reincorporation of the phraseology, they won't ship. I completely get that. It's shipping something, putting it in the post, shipping it. Absolutely. Yeah. Committing to the idea. Da-da.
Yeah, and I love that. And that kind of informs everything that we do. Like we only coach 30 people. Like a coaching company should have hundreds of people in your coaching community. Like it doesn't make any sense because you can't meet them, you can't talk them, you can't get to know them, you can't understand them, you can't give them good advice. So with 30 people, and we'll only ever be 30 people, our books are limited edition books that we publish. They will never be New York Times bestsellers because we just won't print enough copies.
I just love that imperative for a coaching practice. Cap it at 30 and we coach 30. We are full. I love that. That's really profound.
Yeah. And I think that just, again, most people will go for numbers, quality over quantity over quality. Well, that doesn't make sense. It should be quality over quantity, like every time. And it's those kind of things. Yeah. So don't be most people. Do something that other people are not willing to do. Because those are the things probably worth doing and the things that will probably work.
Lovely. And what notes, help or advice might you offer to a younger version of Ian Thackeray now that you've reached the ripe old age of?
Yes. Well, if you've been keeping up with the maths, you know how old I am now. So, I think it's compound interest and small wins. I chased the big wins for years. And when I first started, I mean, that's how I got that first six figure role, was chasing a big win. But actually, it wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't what I needed. It wasn't that fulfilling in the, I mean, it was financially quite profitable, but it wasn't what my soul wanted. And I think when you chase those big wins, they just don't happen. They just don't exist. It's not a real thing. And actually the real thing is just chasing small wins day after day after day. And then it looks like you've had a big win, but you haven't. You've just had the compound effect of 100 small wins. And from the outside, it looks like a big win. Oh, where did you come from? How did you get to here? Well, I just showed up and made a little bit of progress every day for the last 5 years. Didn't do anything magical. There's no secret behind it. There's no, you know, serendipitous moment. It's just simply show up, make a bit of progress and do again tomorrow. And then, yeah.
And stay consistent, stay tenacious. And I so love the fact that your daughter's already equipped for that in what you've described. Yeah. Beautiful. And now, just before we go into a bit of Shakespeare and talk about legacy, this is the pass the golden baton, please, moment. So now that you've experienced this from within, who would you most like, in order to keep the golden thread of storytelling going, who would you like to pass the golden baton to, please, Ian?
So this is very easy for me. So Errol Gerson. Errol Gerson is my business partner for 3.175. He's part of the coaching team with me. He's been a professor at Art Center in Los Angeles for the last 50 years. And he's just a master storyteller. The stories that he has to share are just incredible. I mean, I've heard them now. I've worked with him for 2 years now. I've heard them hundreds of times, and I'm still like, when he winds them up, I'm like, oh, brilliant. He's going to tell this story. And he's just brilliant. So definitely I would recommend spending time with him.
So your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to furnish me with a warm introduction in Passing the Golden Baton, please. And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's prestige and all the bearded women merely players, when all is said and done, Ian Thacker, creative mentor, how would you most like to be remembered?
So I have teachers from when I was a child that I have never spoken to since I left school. And I've probably never told them this, but they were incredibly influential in my growth, in my development, in me ending up being where I am today. And I think that's how I'd like people to look back when they're sitting in their businesses, is just quietly just remember that, you know, meeting this person, spending time with this person allowed me to be here. And I think if I can have some of those, one of those, enough of those, I think that's a really good legacy to leave behind. Nothing fancy, nothing grand. I don't want an Oscar or anything. Just a little note in somebody else's head that they're grateful for what I allowed them to do. That's enough for me.
And I don't doubt, you do the math, there'll be 30 people someday doing just that because of the multiples of 30 that you've helped.
Yeah. So
this is the penultimate moment. Where can we find out more about you and everything that you're up to on the old hinterweb, please?
So the publishing company is at editions.london. And we're going to be releasing a secret edition, which is again playing this game, which you can only find out through our email list, but we're gonna start it on the 15th of May. 15th of May. We're gonna start on a Monday and we're gonna publish it on a Friday, and we're gonna make it live during the course of the week. So from complete initial idea through to literally sending it to the printers with the finished files on a Friday. So editions.london. And if you want to join in with that, then that would be fantastic. 3.175.com for any coaching needs. And I'm on LinkedIn. So I am here on the LinkedIn platform. That's the only place that I am on social media at the moment. So that's the best place if you want to, you know, reach out, contact, chat with me.
As this has been your moment in the sunshine of the Good Listening To Show, stories of distinction and genius, Ian Thacker, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I think building something for yourself is the best decision you will ever make. And whether that's a side project, whether that's a business, whether that's just a simple creative act of doing something on your own, it's incredibly valuable. It's just an amazing experience for yourself, for your growth, for your life. And you should start it. You should do it. You should find a way to fit it in, to get it made. And if you're already in the process of doing it, you should keep going. When that moment comes into your head that you think, okay, that's enough of that, don't stop.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the wonderful Ian Thacker for the founder story of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction Genius. Thank you very much indeed, and good night.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@ThatChrisGrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.